Oh yeah, that hits the spot here. What a way to start off another edition of the Sports Bar Podcast. Minus my co-host Alex Turco today, I'm Scott Manzi. But don't worry, we got another good show, another filled show for you here today, getting into plenty of football. Joining me on today's pod, friend of the program, Colin McQuillan. We'll talk about the NFL, specifically the Jacksonville Jaguars, making a change, the first of many, perhaps, in the front office, relieving general manager Dave Caldwell of his duties after nearly 7 years at the helm of the Jaguars and only one winning record and only one playoff appearance to show for it. So time was certainly up for Dave, and Colin, I'm sure, has some thoughts about that. We'll get into all of that coming up, as well as kind of the general landscape of what has been a very active firing season, change season. I don't know how exactly you want to describe it in the NFL already, as we have seen just this week alone, another GM and head coach lose their job in Detroit and a few others earlier in the season. And then, of course, what is going on in New York with Adam Gase and what feels like an absolute inevitability there still to watch for. So plenty of changes have been made. More changes will be made. We'll dive into all of that, as well as some college football. I want to get into the college football playoff. The first rankings came out last week, and we've already had, well, it's just not the college football playoff without a lot of discussion, a lot of hand-wringing, a lot of concern about how things will play out, even though we have weeks to figure it all out and let it fall into place. But we'll dive into that as well coming up here on today's episode. All right, as we get into the college football landscape, let's go ahead and start with this. And I just want to give a shout-out here, and I know a lot of people have done this throughout the course of the weekend, but here is my platform, here is my chance to do so. And a shout-out to Sarah Fuller, the Vanderbilt kicker this past weekend, became the first woman to appear in a Power 5 college football game. And there have been a lot of things said, most of which, or some of which, I should say, not most, but some of which has just made me just scratch my head in the fact that we even have to dive in and possibly even defend a move like this. Like, it happened. If anybody's seen the footage of this girl both kicking soccer balls and kicking a football, she clearly has a great leg and can kick it. I mean, the kicker here in Jacksonville, Josh Lambeau, when he's healthy, former soccer goalkeeper, and that's exactly what Fuller is. She was just playing with the Vanderbilt women's soccer team in just a few weeks ago, and here she is in a situation in which, I mean, it's every person up, next person up almost in this situation, because we have just seen what with normal injury attrition, with opt-outs that have been a new addition this year to at least at a greater scale than we've ever seen when it comes to how rosters have been impacted in the college football world. And then you have COVID and players testing positive and contact tracing, eliminating people. So yeah, of course, coaches are turning every which way to find enough healthy bodies to go out there and play games on a week in, week out basis. And I'll talk more about why that is the case here in a moment, but it was just cool. I mean, I saw the footage. Like I said, she can certainly kick it. It's a different, I mean, I don't want to get too far into the as a former kicker world here, but I did kick for a handful of years in both high school and college, and I started teaching myself how to do so when I was in eighth grade. And I played soccer all growing up, and it took a lot of practice to kind of get down that rhythm, that kind of cadence to it, because you're striking the ball significantly different than you do a soccer ball. And I found that my soccer, actually, for me at least, my soccer kicking suffered after I really started to focus more on kicking on the football side of things. But she went out there, and it was, I joked with one of my friends on Saturday night, it was eerily similar to my high school debut and my lone high school kicking experience in an actual game, in which the final game of my senior year, it was all set up for me to go out there and get the experience. I was one of maybe two seniors, if not the only senior, that didn't appear in the game on senior day the week before at home. So that was obviously a disappointment on my end of things. So, you know, our coach said, you'll get an opportunity to kick here this week. You know, it's the finale. We weren't good. We only won two games. There was no playoffs coming up. So he drew it up and gave me the opportunity to kick that week. We were playing at Episcopal, right down the road, rivalry game. And I warmed up, ready to go. And wouldn't you know it, almost the exact same way it played out for poor Sarah Fuller on Saturday, our offense managed to not score and not even drive close enough really to get a field goal attempt off either. So my only chance to get into the game was to go out there and kick off to start the second half. And it was also a squib kick dialed up for me to kick off to start the second half. And when I watched the highlight, because obviously I wasn't dialed into Vanderbilt getting smoked on Saturday afternoon, I was actually working. We had a game that day. So I came back and home and saw the highlights from earlier that day. And I saw it and I saw Vandy getting blanked. I saw the highlight of her squibbing the kickoff to start the second half. And I go, Sarah, I've been there. I know exactly what that's like. Now, hopefully for her, she gets another opportunity here. I'd love to see her, you know, try a field goal or something like that. I mean, I'm one that roots for kicking in general. I'm a special teams guy, the special teams guy of this podcast. Certainly, Alex, if we needed advice on a former freshman football, like right guard, we would go to him. But for kicking, I mean, I'm the one that did that. And I mean, it's a squib kick. It doesn't look pretty. That's the whole purpose of it. It was windy out there, which obviously didn't seem to help things as she needed the ball to be held. But good for her. And, you know, good for Vanderbilt. I mean, shame that it goes from, you know, Vanderbilt does this and then you see Derek Mason get fired, 24 hours later, and it kind of changes maybe for some of the perspective of what happened on Saturday. But I have always been of the ilk that, you know, women probably can't go in and play most positions on a football field. They could probably play some of them more than we're willing as men to accept or even as society to accept. But I have no doubt in my mind that a woman could go out there and kick at a pretty high level. I mean, hopefully this means we'll see more opportunities or even just, as I saw on a lot of the messages on social media being, hopefully we'll just see more of a perspective for, you know, girls growing up to make them see that, hey, this is something I can try. Whereas, you know, maybe before, no one ever thought that they could do that, so there was no attempt made. But anybody that's ever seen the highlights of Carly Lloyd drilling 50-something yarders at Texans practices a few years ago, she tried out for the Eagles a year or so back as well. I mean, there are undoubtedly, in my mind, women who can kick and punt at a high level, whether that be college or maybe even professionally. And I'd like to see, hopefully, more go out there and give it a try. But Sarah Fuller, my hat off to you, and I really hope that, you know, your team can give you a chance to maybe go out there and score a couple points this year. And I know how lonely it can be standing on the sideline watching an offense that can't even function well enough to get you into scoring range sometimes, and that's frustrating. But, you know, good for her for kind of just saying, you know, I'm going to go do this. And she beat out a handful of men in an open tryout for this thing too. So it's not like she was just gifted this spot. And again, I hope that she gets another opportunity. I hope she's not the last that we see get this chance as well. Wanted to start with that and wanted to continue the college football conversation now with a look at the college football playoff. I talked about it. The rankings came out last Tuesday. Alabama, number one. Notre Dame, number two. Clemson, three. Ohio State, four. That was your first four. By the time you're listening to this, the rankings for the next week of the college football playoff, week two, I guess you could say, of the college football playoff rankings should be out, or at least could be out. I don't expect to see any change. In a week in which none of the teams in the top four and lost. I'm not sure we've ever had a week in which people have discussed the top four more. And it was the one team out of the three that didn't play that we heard talked about the most. And that, of course, is Ohio State. Ohio State missing this past week's game due to COVID-related issues with positive tests and contact tracing. The Big Ten itself is having a bit of a reckoning right now when it comes to this, because it is the one league that kind of touted, or one of two leagues along with the Pac-12, that touted their daily testing and how that should help eliminate these giant wipeouts with contact tracing. But we're still seeing the Big Ten affected as much, if not more, than other leagues by these issues over these last several weeks. And if you remember, we don't need to relitigate what the decisions was with the Big Ten, and coming back after initially announcing they weren't going to play in the fall and then announcing they would play in the fall, and then how that process sort of played out and how that condensed schedule was presented. And the Big Ten basically gave itself little to no margin for error. And now we're finding ourselves in a situation in which arguably, and I say arguably, because they may not play enough games to prove it, the best team in the Big Ten, Ohio State, another team that looks like a playoff contender, that has one of the best quarterbacks in the country, that has one of the better coaches in the country, that has been there, that has done that. They're looking straight down the barrel of a situation in which they may not play enough games to qualify based off of Big Ten standards set before the season started to play in the championship game. If this happens, and perhaps you end up with a situation where an Indiana team that already lost to Ohio State and is now without its starting quarterback, Michael Penix Jr., the engine that kind of drives that train in Bloomington, Indiana, that them playing against a Northwestern team that just lost to Michigan State, who's not very good this year, that was just Michigan State's second win of the season, those two teams would be playing potentially for a Big Ten championship game. For the Big Ten championship with a playoff berth on the line? I find that almost hard to believe. And maybe, I mean, there is not necessarily precedence in the way that we're seeing it now, but a little precedence on a team that doesn't make a championship game making the playoff. Maybe we would see Ohio State get in anyway, but is that even fair at this point, depending on how many games Ohio State plays? I know, eye test-wise, I look at them, and I say, yeah, this team is probably one of the best four in the country. And I know you at home are probably doing the exact same thing. But is a Ohio State team that played six games and missed a lot of time due to COVID, should they get the benefit of the doubt? Is that fair for them to get the benefit of the doubt over a team that perhaps has earned it on the field? There is no sport more than college football in which you truly say, prove it to me. You must earn this. You must win every game or nearly every game in order to earn an opportunity. And you must challenge yourself now in the era of the college football playoff to play tough schedules. And I know this year is completely different with most leagues not playing non-conference opponents, a lack of a chance to challenge themselves in the scheduling department. And I know that Ohio State probably shouldn't be punished per se for something that is, I still think, largely out of the control of people involved. I know that we've had certain programs that touted their low to no positive test rate when it comes to this throughout the course of the season. And I think that's great, but that's only as good as the next day's round of tests, you know? I mean, we saw Florida State go through a couple of positives early and then none from late September when Coach Norvell tested positive all the way up through this past week. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. You can be as protective as you want to, and sometimes things still happen. So I really don't know, and I don't think anybody knows the answer to whether or not Ohio State should get into the playoffs, should get the benefit of the doubt. Again, I think they'll be there, still sitting at fourth when all this is said and done. I don't think we see a change to the top four on Tuesday night. Alabama 1, Notre Dame 2, Clemson 3, Ohio State 4, because the other three teams won and won in impressive fashion. And because of that, you shouldn't see a change. And really, it comes down to, would anybody below Ohio State do enough to jump them? Well, Texas A&M, Florida, Cincinnati, two of those three teams won on Saturday. Cincinnati was off due to their game against Temple being canceled due to COVID. But I don't see any of them having done enough to make a jump this past week of an idle Ohio State. And it comes down to, will any of those teams do enough to jump when it's all said and done? Florida, they have the clearest path to this. Right now, they went out. They go to the SEC title game. They beat Alabama. They're in. And I believe that Alabama would be in as well. And then you just have to look at what happens in the ACC championship game. I mean, we could be sitting here in a situation where two teams from the SEC and two teams from the ACC make this college football playoff. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility at this point in time. So start wrapping your mind around that now, because that could be what we're looking at. But again, we've got a long way to go in this. We've got a long way to go. And I was team expand the playoff earlier in this process, right? I wanted to see, in this crazy year, just put more teams in. But as we've kind of narrowed things down here and more teams are losing games or more teams are not being able to play their games, we have really sort of narrowed it down to what could probably constitute it as a top eight. If you want to throw BYU in with those aforementioned seven teams I gave you before. Because once you get beyond and they're below right now, right? Like, they really could use an opportunity for a type of play-in game. Maybe, like the NBA is doing now with that kind of last spot in the playoff being a play-in game. Maybe this year would be the year for, like, the winner of Cincinnati BYU if they're both undefeated at the end of the year and they can get a game together to get that last spot. I don't know. But it'll be fascinating to see the drama once again in college football playing out largely off the field as opposed to on it. But isn't that sort of the way the sport has always been and part of our weird love affair with it? Before we get to Colin McQuillan and a little bit of NFL talk, specifically on the Jaguars now in search of a GM and perhaps a head coach at the end of the year as well, I want to get into our Cold as Ice segment for the week. The Cold as Ice segment is presented by Ice Mule Coolers. Again, Ice Mule Coolers, the official sponsor of the Sports Bar Podcast, coming to you live from the Ice Mule Coolers studios here today. Ice Mule is still running its holiday special right now. So if you go to icemulecoolers.com, no promo code needed, for free shipping and 20% off all your purchases. Yes, it is officially December. That means that the holidays are upon us. Whether it's Christmas, whether it's Hanukkah, whatever holiday, maybe a birthday, whatever your gift-giving needs are for this year, make it an Ice Mule Cooler. You may be getting together with small groups of family and friends over the course of the holidays, trying to keep it safe. Well, hey, what way to keep things safe than to keep your drinks cold and by themselves separate from everyone else's? That way you don't even have to interact with anybody else at the fridge. Go ahead and or grab that shared bottle of liquor. Go ahead and get your own Ice Mule Cooler. Keep your drinks cold throughout the course of this holiday season. And again, a great gift if you're looking for something for that family member that you can't seem to decide what they want or what they need for the holidays. Go ahead and get them an Ice Mule Cooler. 20% off and free shipping. No promo code needed. Ice Mule Coolers today, the official sponsor of the Sports Bar Podcast and the Cold as Ice segment. So today is Cold as Ice. That belongs to old friend of the program, Walt Bell, and UMass football. So I want to go ahead and give a hat tip here to Roger Sherman of The Ringer. He's a college sports writer and usually has some fun tidbits. He pointed out on Saturday after UMass lost to Liberty. Final score, 28-0. Actually, it was 28-0 in the second quarter. They ended up losing by more than that. Here's some numbers for you for UMass. Now, you may recall Walt Bell, former Florida State offensive coordinator, which is why I called him former friend of the program. He came out prior to the season and said that it was the worst day of his life when it was announced that they would not be playing in the fall, worse than when his mother passed away. Now, it turned out that they didn't have the greatest of relationships, but still, odd thing to say. Well, good for him. UMass ended up getting in a season anyway. They got four games in. They went 0-4. They lost the other three games by a combined score of 116-12 before Liberty's loss on Saturday. No more games scheduled this year. By the way, UMass did not get paid to lose to Liberty. It was a weird deal in which the two teams played pro bono at each other's place twice. The total amount of money, so when it was all said and done, they were outscored 161-12, dead last per game on offense in college football, 122nd out of 127 on defense. They were outgained 482-189 on average yards-wise, allowed 21 touchdowns, while reaching the opposing red zone just twice. Reached the opposing red zone just twice all season. And they received a grand total of $220,000 for the whole season to play those games, which may not even have covered travel expenses. At this point, is it even worth it? Is it even worth it for UMass to play football? I mean, I don't want to see anybody lose a football program, but at the same time, that just seems miserable for everyone involved. Everyone involved. But since Walt Bell decided to leave Florida State after engineering a terrible offense to take the UMass job, and then also badmouthed the program on the way out the door so that Sam Howell wouldn't sign with the Noles and is now lighting things up for North Carolina, can't say I'm overly sad to see Coach Bell and the Minutemen struggling up there in the Northeast. UMass football, cold as ice this week, presented by Ice Mule Coolers. All right, coming up, friend of the program, Colin McQuillan, as we talk NFL. Joined now by recurring guest and friend of the program, Colin McQuillan. He has really orchestrated a very fancy coup d'etat here in the fact that he is partially responsible for Alex not being on the program this week, so allowing him to fill in. But as always, Colin, appreciate you jumping on.
You know, it's good to be here. I figure if there's, you know, if there's one way to weasel my way into the program, then I think I've found it. So we'll keep it up, see how that goes.
Well, the reason why I wanted to have you specifically on this week, I was thinking about reaching out before Alex was unavailable, but we went in depth about a month and a half ago on the Jaguars, and it was unplanned, but it went into about 20-something minutes on kind of the direction of this program and or the organization, I should say, and some of the management / mismanagement in the past. And of course, as of about 24 hours ago, as we record this, Dave Caldwell was officially relieved of his duties after nearly 7 years on the job as the general, over 7 years, about 7.5 years as the general manager of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And so this is the first step. I wanted to know if you, like me, felt this sort of sense of relief in the fact that in the back of my mind the whole time I was still almost concerned that Shad Khan wasn't going to pull the trigger at the end of the year?
Until the news broke, I was 99% sure that everyone involved was going to keep their jobs. I feel like we had no reason to believe otherwise. You just were getting the feeling when things were going as bad as they were that it was almost, you know, because it feels like we now know that Gardner is likely healthy enough to play. He's still not playing. And it almost felt like there was a handshake and a wink that said, let's embrace the tank. We'll throw out Luton. We'll throw out Glennon. I don't need you guys coaching for wins or putting a product on the field because, you know, wink, wink. You're good. You're safe. And until that news broke, I was terrified of that reality.
And I mean, and it's justified because it felt like going into the season, that was sort of the case. Everybody thought that these, like both Doug Marrone, the head coach who is staying through the end of the year, and I would assume is done at the end of the year, but I do understand the reason not to fire him now because, I mean, the team is still playing hard enough to, and they seem to be coaching him as well as they could considering the lack of talent on the roster right now. So he, I imagine, will be out the door. Of course, Caldwell was retained again at the beginning of the season, much to much shock and awe. This is an organization that has a history of not pulling the trigger early. So I completely understand why you were like that. I was feeling the exact same way. But now we can sit here and look forward, look to the future and what that might hold. I mean, you agree with me, right? Like Doug Marrone is, he's going to get to the end of the season and that's it.
Yeah. Now I prefer Marrone go ahead and stay through the year. I'm fine with him not getting the axe. Just interim coaches tend to try and get spunky and try and, you know, make a name for themselves. Now the Jags can still lose one more game and I believe be locked into a top two spot. I think as long as they don't win two or more, they should end up with a top two pick. But and we can get into you know, my thoughts and feelings on one versus two in terms of draft picks and here in a little bit. But I think you keep Marrone, you keep the coaching staff that they're still going out there every Sunday and they are, you know, a little feisty. But the last thing that you want to do, and I think yesterday it was pretty hilarious that the world took notice to Todd Walsh not coaching one game, and the defense started with a sack and a tackle for loss and a three and out with a punt. So at that perspective, I think right now what you're doing is you public that this organization with, you know, top five in cap room, top five in draft picks this next season, likely going to have, you know, one of the top two quarterbacks coming out. You know, that's that in the state with no income tax. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why this job could weirdly be desirable. You don't generally ever think that about the Jacksonville Jaguars, but from a GM's perspective, it's kind of like when John Lynch rolled into San Francisco where they gave him, you know, a 5-year guarantee. They put him on, you know, attached him to the hip with a good young head coach, said, you've got picks, you've got a new quarterback. That was Jimmy G at the time. You got a new quarterback, you've got picks, you've got money, now go nuts. And I think that's, you're putting the candidates on, you know, of the available candidates on notice that this job is available and there are options.
Doesn't part of the desirability feel like what just happened with the long, long, long leash that was given? Shouldn't that raise the attention of potential GM candidates too? I mean, it's not like you're getting 2-3 years.
And you'll never get fired no matter what you do.
Basically.
Job security is at a premium.
Okay, so where do you want to go? I mean, what we're picking two as of now. The obvious choice seems to be Lawrence 1, Fields 2. I wouldn't expect. Basically, the Jets are taking Lawrence 1, or they're trading out of 1 for somebody else that would want to take him. It doesn't seem likely that. I don't know. Crazier things have happened.
I mean, I don't think there's a planet where Joe Douglas trades out of 1 and gives up, you know, Trevor Lawrence. He's the highest quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck. I mean, he's in that tier of prospect. I mean, obviously you never know who's going to be what, but I don't think there's, if any team that ends up at 1, Lawrence mm-hmm. is going 1. I don't think that's even a conversation. Now, what I alluded to earlier is the number 2 pick is, I personally am not, not that I think Justin Fields is bad, not that I don't think he can't be a great quarterback for 10 years. I almost equate the Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence kind of like an Andrew Luck RG3 situation, where you know that the first guy is a bona fide, you know, potential game changer, and the second guy has massive potential, a massive ceiling, but you're still a little raw there. coming from a system in a team that has never translated into pro success. I mean, Ohio State quarterbacks and the NFL are about the antithesis of one another. They don't seem to ever work out.
Joe Burrow, come on, give him some credit.
Yeah, exactly. Joe Burrow and all his Ohio State success. And that's with Fields. I mean, I see some people in the Jag circles really liking Wilson from BYU. I don't know what that is. I mean, I think if you can, Lawrence is I think a head and shoulders, at least for me, from a prospect standpoint, above everyone else. And at this point, what I'm really banking on is, week 17, the Patriots and Jets play. If the Patriots are out of it, I mean, would it not be the most Bill Belichick thing ever to go ahead and spoil the Jets getting a guy like Trevor Lawrence? I mean, come on, we'll send Bill an edible arrangement or something, make sure that happens. But I like Lawrence a lot more than I like Fields.
Lawrence definitely feels the most pro ready guy. Like, he's going to step into any system that isn't Adam Gase's system and be able to perform at a level that we've started to see more and more from some of these rookie quarterbacks that come in. Fields feels like a guy that you have to build a system around. I mean, he's not just plug and play any pro offense type deal, but his skill set is still so tantalizing because he's so big, he's so strong, he's so fast. He's got a laser arm. I mean, it's all there if you get the right coaching staff in there to take advantage of it. And I think we've seen this year, when healthy, the Jaguars have good pieces to put around a quarterback. I mean, I like what they're building at receiver. The running back obviously is the best diamond in the rough that anybody's found in a long time. And the O-line is probably a piece away from being pretty darn solid too.
Right. And I think the massive glaring holes are on the Jags or on defense. Mm-hmm. You got to feel for Gardner, but he never had a chance to succeed, just because unless he planned on hanging 40 points a game, it was never going to happen. So, a lot of people have been talking, okay, well, what do you do with Gardner? What do you do with Gardner? You put him on the bench and you have the best backup in the quarterback, best backup quarterback in the league, who costs you like $500,000 a year. I mean, you control his contract. There's absolutely no reason to get rid of him. And you've got, a bona fide starter capable-esque player as your backup. I mean, you don't get rid of a guy like that. So I feel like it's been interesting, unless someone calls and they want to make a Teddy Bridgewater deal with Gardner, then they're ready to get rid of some pieces, which I don't think is going to happen. But yeah, I mean, I like you have to like what the Jags have around. Like you said, you got, bona fide pieces with Chark and Chenault. And then once again, who knows what they're going to do in free agency, what they do with all these picks. There's no reason they can't add more pieces to that offense. I think they're probably going to have to overspend a little bit to keep Cam Robinson, which stinks, but once again, they've got the money to do it, and you don't want to start fresh with a brand new quarterback and a brand new left tackle. You'd like to keep some kind of continuity there, and they'll probably have to pay for it. Overall, to the listeners, I'm far from going on record saying Justin Fields is RG3 and he's going to be a bust. I'm just more so saying there is that feeling where one guy feels like the safest, warmest pick that you could make, where you just know for a fact, you've got your guy for the next 10 years. And then the other one feels like, hey, this could be huge, or it could explode in our face, but I don't know what the answer will be. It'll just be exciting. And knowing the Jags, we can't have nice things. It'll probably go the way of the latter, because that's just, Murphy's Law.
Yeah, it's a Murphy's Law type franchise, though. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I have a little more faith because the Browns, who the Jags just lost to on Sunday, finally seem to be eradicating some demons in a way. And if they can do it, then maybe any franchise can.
Yeah, and that's, the thing is with the Browns is they're doing it. We just watched that game. Can I say Baker Mayfield stinks? I mean, is he any good? I mean, is there any reason outside of, right now you hit on Nick Chubb in the second round. They've got a really good offensive line. quite frankly, Kareem Hunt's a fluke. That he should not be on their team. They are paying him dirt money because of a fluke scenario. And, you know, when he hits the open market, they'll either have to overpay him or he'll be gone. And then they're playing, you know, pretty good defense. They've got Myles Garrett on his rookie deal. We'll see what the old Browns can do when they actually have cap issues to deal with and they actually have to start paying some of these guys, because they're in their window. I mean, every team, you know, once again, we know the formula. It's have a rookie quarterback who can play. And that's what will make the Chargers job, I think, very, very appetizing, which I'm sure we'll dig into here in a minute. Find a rookie quarterback who can play, put pieces around him, and take advantage of that 4 or 5 year window that you have. And that's what the Browns are doing right now. But I mean, Baker is just, I mean, ugh.
Yeah, he missed some throws on Sunday. I mean, that drive, like in the second quarter where they're down on the goal line, and I mean, I could have thrown a touchdown on that second down and goal.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. He's bailing out and there wasn't even pressure in his face. It was weird. But
yeah, no. I think that's and people are floating John Dorsey out already for the Jags. I'm like, absolutely not. Did we not just see him and what he did? Like, no.
Is there any scenario where you see a new head coach being hired and given the keys to the car as well?
When you say, like, as in like calling plays or
as GM and head coach, the Bill Parcells, if I'm going to cook dinner, I better be able to shop for the groceries.
I don't think there's one available. I mean, I don't know who has that kind of clout that gets, I mean, I was kind of surprised that the foosball team gave that to Ron Rivera. I'm not sure what Ron Rivera has done. I think he's a very solid coach. I don't, he's never won a Super Bowl. He's been to one, got blown out in it. I mean, if you're talking about, you know, the Bill Parcells, the Bill Belichicks, the people that we know have been given that opportunity, I don't think Ron Rivera is on that level. So if they did, I think it would be an oversight. I think it would be an over investment in that head coach, because I don't know of a head coach who's, you know, ready to come to Jacksonville. I mean, you know, once again, is Bill Belichick ready to retire in Florida and we're going to give him $100 million? Then, you know, maybe, but we laugh, but then we see what John Gruden got.
Yeah. True.
Which I think him and Mayock are just kind of working together, but he definitely, I think, has a say in a lot of things more than most head coaches compared to, you know, with their relationship, him and Mayock. But, yeah, I don't see a head coach who's doing that. My overall hope for a head coach, I'd like to see some kind of youth movement. I'd like to see, you know, once again, everyone makes the joke, if you've had a cup of coffee with Sean McVay, you get to be a head coach. But, you know, you like what LaFleur is doing in Green Bay. You like what Shanahan's done with the Niners. You like what McVay's done with the Rams. You like what – I mean, even Vrabel, who, you know, he's not 35, but he's also not 65. You know, and he, you know, his playing days are closer in his playing days are closer to his life than his Social Security check. So I would put him in that, you know, that younger echelon of head coaches. And I just think you're seeing a lot of success from those guys. I think that players and the new generation and the new mentality of players answers just better to these guys who they can relate to more, who they coach them and they, you know, stick them on the important stuff and they let the dumb stuff go. And that's, you know, the Tom Coughlins of the world. And I mean, even people tell stories about Belichick and, you know, how hardcore he is and things like that. But then you actually talk to his players or you see behind the scenes film and he's a lot more easygoing within the building with the dumb stuff. You know, they're listening to music in the locker room. He's not going and, you know, hitting the radio with a baseball bat, Billy Bean style. So I think you just need to get a younger guy in there who understands the culture and the mentality of the modern player and gets those results out of them.
I'm with you. I wish for some reason, I don't know why, it just seems like it's easier to identify targets for like college jobs than it is for professional jobs, maybe because the pool is so much bigger for NFL jobs.
And you start to with college, I think you start to look at guys with recruiting ties in certain locations of the country, and you're like, well, you know, hey, he can go down there because he used to recruit there for 15 years when he was a strength and conditioning coach and blah, 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 blah. Where in the NFL, it's just, it's a complete business, and you're, you know, regionally and things like that plays almost no importance. So yeah, I'll be, you know, the head coach, you know, obviously it starts with the GM, and the GM will bring in his head coach, but we'll see. It's going to, I mean, like almost every year besides the 2017 going into 18 off season, the off season's our playoffs, baby. This is where we come to play. This is where we get interesting. This is where we shine.
Yeah. Counting down to Black Monday and then the follow up to that throughout the course of what will be, I'm sure, an interesting January and February and so on. But
right, absolutely.
Hey, step one was taken on Sunday. Again, GM Dave Caldwell relieved of his duties after being hired back in 2013. He was one of the first pieces that, you know, kind of the new version of Shad Khan and the leadership wanted to attack. It was him and Bradley, and then, man, oh, man. That feels like it was 100 years ago. And
that's Bradley.
Goodness.
Soon to also be unemployed.
Yes. I'm not going to think about that anymore. Okay. We've gone a lot into the Jaguars here. I want to get into a few other teams. We've already seen three coaching changes, even though the Jaguars don't fall under that quite yet, technically speaking. We have seen some change already here this offseason, and we're due, I think, for more. So let's go ahead and we discussed this back in mid-October when you last came on the program. We looked at some organizations that may be in the running for a new head coach and a new quarterback because we figured they would be competing directly with the Jaguars for said things. So we already mentioned the team drafting number one overall. We don't have to get back into that. The New York Jets, unless something goes crazy, they'll be drafting one overall. They'll be doing it with the new head coach because we already documented how Joe Douglas he's not Adam Gase's guy and didn't hire him and isn't going to keep him. And I think Sam Darnold is due for a fresh change of scenery as well. And that could really spur some dominoes where he ends up in the offseason if he gets dealt as well. Okay. I don't think you see another coaching change in the AFC East. I think everybody else there is pretty safe. I don't foresee any changes in the North either. Cincinnati, you still don't think they're going to make a coaching change, right? Only year two of Zach Taylor?
No, I mean, I think you saw some promise. You know, I think if Burrow stays healthy and they implode and it starts looking bad, maybe. But you saw some positivity. You saw some grit. You saw some fight. They still have a lot of issues. I mean, you want to talk about tanking. I think if you're them and you can tank your way into Penei Sewell to protect Joe Burrow for the next 10 years, that would be a very ideal situation. But I think it's right. If I were a Bengals fan, I would not be ready. Cause I mean, you see all these young quarterbacks who come into the league, you know, Blaine Gabbert was one of them where, you know, the Jags move on from Blaine rightfully, but then you actually dig into it and you're like, he had three head coaches and four offensive coordinators. You know, he had, and it happens all the time where these expectations are set out and no one's willing to have any semblance of patience and they're not letting the coaches actually enact their game plan or their offense. And they're just moving on from coach to coach to coach. And then these high draft picks, these number one overall picks never get comfortable. So, I mean, I think you need to give him some continuity. You keep Zach Taylor. If next year looks horrible, you know, and then you can think about moving on. But I think you stick around for now.
Cam Newton, I think the only quarterback out of that draft class. Remember, that was the lockout year that had any semblance of success because there was a bunch of quarterbacks that got overdrafted and then there was no offseason. So
right.
How the heck are you supposed to be any good?
Right. I mean, that's, you know, I think we've all, as Florida State guys have noted, that between Ponder and EJ Manuel and now you honestly have to put lump Jameis in there too. It's like,
yep.
How much should they be donating to the kids first fund? Or I don't know if Jimbo still does that, but he definitely got those boys paid with some, you know, very high draft stock and what appears to be much higher than where they needed to be drafted.
Not that I think that Kellen Mond is going to be a super high prospect, but buyer beware there.
Yeah. I mean, bail now if you can.
AFC South, we saw a coaching change already. Bill O'Brien let go, but they're not making a change at quarterback.
No.
Neither of us know enough about the coaching carousel to really speculate on where Houston goes to hire somebody new, but they'll be looking for a GM as well as a head coach. So it's just something to keep in mind that the Jaguars will be competing with for said pieces. And now,
wait, real quick.
Yeah.
How much better outside of the Deshaun Watson factor? Because Deshaun is, I mean, amazing. You watch, I mean, mm-hmm. there are not many guys that on Sundays you're not, you know, ready to click over and watch sooner than watching Deshaun. But the Bill O'Brien, not only was he a trash fire, but he left a trash fire behind.
Oh yeah.
If you're a prospective GM, a prospective coach, I think Deshaun Watson is a big part of the decision you're making, but you don't have a first or second round pick for 2 years. They have the highest payroll in the NFL.
And they're not good.
And they're not good. And they're missing pieces all over the mm-hmm. place. And they have money tied up in J.J. Watt that there is just going to be, you know, a complete salary dump. They've got money. I mean, Tunsil's getting paid, which, I mean, their offensive line's not good. So I don't know. I mean, I can't assume that the other four suck and Laremy Tunsil is just blocking his butt off because they're, I mean, every time I do turn on Deshaun Watson, he's running for his life. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you're a prospective GM, I would have to imagine that you actually probably would prefer the Jags. I mean,
outside of quarterback, I would take everything else that the Jaguars have on offense over what Houston has.
But even you're looking at the green grass of, well, hey, I'm going to go draft my guy. I've got the one or number two pick, and I'm going to go find my Deshaun Watson. Because, exactly. I mean, you don't get to that level of, you know, of competition. And, you know, you're talking about one of 32 that gets to be an NFL GM, and they have a level of confidence in themselves that they know everything. They're going to find the guy. They're, you know, so that's, I'll be interested to see if some of these big name guys, where they end up, because not many jobs can look much more attractive than the Jags right now from a GM standpoint. Yeah, the team may stink, but that's not what they care about, because they're blaming that on other people.
Will Fuller banned for the next like 5-6 games or whatever due to PEDs. So yeah, rest
of the year.
There's your number one receiver.
Right. That's also a free agent.
Yeah. Goodness gracious. And has a hard time catching the ball even with performance enhancing drugs.
Yeah, and his hamstrings, the PEDs don't seem to help his hamstrings.
Yeah, folks, don't do steroids. Not great. All right, let's go to the West where things get interesting. The Denver Broncos, year two under Vic Fangio. They're a feisty bunch. They played what may have been the most bizarre football game ever with the situation in which they literally had no quarterbacks, all four of them out for the game. So they started they ran the Wildcat and played Kendall Hinton, a former quarterback / wide receiver from Wake Forest, and looked predictably terrible. I mean, I didn't think I watched the first like two drives just because I was like, I'm curious. And then I was like, well, this game's terrible. So
did him exactly zero favors from a play calling perspective. Cause it's like, can you run a screen? Can you run, you know, a couple of those little pop passes when someone comes in motion? Can you just do something to help us? They basically ran the Army offense where we're going to just chuck it deep 9 times a game and run the ball every other time. Mm-hmm. And actually the Ringer had someone from the Ringer had a good tweet. And it was like, just so you know, and what was the quarterback? Is it Kendall Hinton?
Kendall Hinton. Yeah.
Kendall Hinton was an all-state high school quarterback who was given a scholarship to Wake Forest as a quarterback and then converted to receiver. If you think you could do anything in the NFL besides fall down, think again.
I saw that again. I believe it was Zach Cram that had that tweet. Yes. And yes, that was so true. I mean, guy, unbelievable high school player, started Division I college football as a quarterback for a while. I mean, he lost out to John Wolford, who's currently the backup for the Rams. That's no slouch. It's not like he got beat out by
Jack Native.
Yes, exactly. Bishop Kenny product. But I mean, the guy was a perfectly good quarterback at many, many levels. And yes, it isn't as simple as just stepping in and it being able to throw the ball in the NFL. No. It's far from it. No. Goodness gracious. I still don't see him making a change. I mean, we still haven't seen enough of Drew Lock in to truly write him off, even though he hasn't looked great. But what a weird year it's been for him.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say Drew Lock stinks. I don't know, you know, it's nothing there that, once again, and it's kind of how I, you know, gauge Gardner, as much as I like Gardner. And I think he is a very solid player. Not,
can you see Drew Lock holding up the Lombardi Trophy one day? And I don't think the answer to that question is yes. Can you see Drew Lock consistently beating Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert four times a year? I don't think the answer to that question is yes. So
no.
I don't think you're donezo with Fangio. Now, I also have a question too with the NFL. The NFL is moving the Steelers-Pittsburgh game around. They've got moved from Thursday to Monday, Monday to Tuesday, Tuesday to Wednesday. Why could they not do that for the Broncos? Like, who in the Broncos front office pissed off Roger Goodell that they couldn't move that game around to accommodate them?
I think it was really only the quarterback room. I don't think they had the sheer numbers that we've seen from the Steelers or mostly from the Ravens.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah. Alex wanted to point out, by the way, that he's very mad that the Ravens are the ones to blame for this and doesn't think it's fair that his Steelers should have to play on a Wednesday if this game actually goes off, because it has changed now four times from last Wednesday until now, the schedule of that. So we'll see if it gets played. Currently scheduled for Wednesday.
My sympathy for the Steelers is like negative 20 million.
Same. Like, oh, dang.
But don't worry. Big Ben will tell us about all 15 of his injuries sustained in this short week.
Yeah, I'm sure he somehow has contact traced out due to the Ravens having COVID. I mean,
right.
Anything that it can keep him from having to practice this week. All right, so
go ahead.
Last thing on the Broncos. I mean, you don't think that Drew Lock's the answer, but put your John Elway GM cap on. Like, he's not making a change. Drew Lock's tall.
Yeah.
As a laser arm.
I think it'll be interesting to see, just because, like we talked about on the last podcast, you have the potential for 5-6 quarterbacks going in the first round in this next draft. So, I mean, as from a quarterback perspective and an offense perspective, you know, an offensive perspective, one of the best young tight ends in the game. You know, Jerry Jeudy, Cortland Sutton hasn't been healthy all year, but you have a really good wide receiver tandem in Jeudy and Sutton. They just extended Garrett Bowles. So, I mean, they're, you know, to top tier money. So you got your set left tackle. Offensively, there's no reason they shouldn't be awesome. You know, you have Gordon, you know, Phillip Lindsay and Melvin Gordon, very, you know, two in which you're starting to see the, you know, even the top tier running. I mean, you know, it's a two-headed monster now for almost every good rushing team. It's not the feature back situation anymore. So, I mean, from offensively, Drew Lock has had every opportunity to show you he's the guy, because it's not like other teams where you're like, oh man, they're just full of hole. And I mean, defensively, you got Bradley Chubb,
Von Miller.
Yeah, Von Miller's been hurt, so that's kind of rough. But I don't know. I'll be interested. I think whether they make a change of quarterback entirely depends on where their big board lies in terms of the quarterbacks available, where they land in the draft, and just how that works out. Because once again, we've seen it with Drew Rosen. You've seen it with some other guys where it's like, hey, we drafted you in the first, second round, and we already don't care because we'll just find someone else.
Yeah, definitely less of a stigma attached to dumping the second round guy versus the first round guy. And Lock being a second rounder, they could quietly make a change there. Be like, oh, we were drafted and we hoped. You know, that's how it goes.
Just throwing darts at a wall.
Yeah. All right. So the other team in that division, the Chargers, they've got their guy. I mean, Herbert is good. Despite all the adversity he's gone through, from day one, when he was thrown into a game 10 minutes before, didn't even know he's going to start, and starts and looks good. So what is the problem? It's got to be something else there. And it feels like this is just a team that is just not very organized, it just doesn't feel very well coached, in other words. And Anthony Lynn, I know that he was probably the hardest one we were analyzing a month and a half ago. Do you feel like the picture has cleared some with his future?
Yeah, no, I mean, the picture is, you know, cleared with, I mean, was that before the season or a few weeks into the season that we last talked?
It was mid-October, so we were, a month into the season.
Yeah, so since then he's got one and or zero wins. So I think that's how the way the picture is cleared for everyone is, you know, ultimately, this is a numbers game and a results-based business. And you may like a guy, you may think he could even be the right guy for the job, but if it's not translating to the field, then and it's not like he's in his first year. He's been, you know, and you want to talk about, I would put them and the Falcons in the same boat of, we don't understand why they're bad when you look at their roster and their pieces. And I mean, you know, obviously Eckler just got back, but you've got Eckler, you've got Mike Williams, you've got Keenan Allen, you've got, you know, on the defense, you've got Bosa and you've got Melvin Ingram and you've got, you know, well, Derwin James, same, you know, from a health perspective, like we highlighted last time, the Chargers seem to always be hurt. They're better at that than anyone in the NFL, that is for sure.
But they're better than a three-win team.
100%. I mean, there's just absolutely no – and the way they lose, much like the Falcons, it's like they bring it to an art form. It's like, how do you do this? I mean, it's like you can't draw – I mean, Ernest Hemingway couldn't write this stuff. Like, this is just absolutely insane that you find these ways to lose these games or – like you talked about, I mean, we all saw the mismanagement of the clock at the end of this, you know, of the Bills game. It's just, you know, I think he will land another head coaching job. I think, you know, I don't think he ever was a coordinator specifically before he became a head coach.
I think he was an OC. I'm trying to remember where, but
We can look. We'll get research on that.
Yeah. IT.
Yeah, exactly. Because he is so much of a, you know, like we talked about, you know, the CEO of the franchise as opposed to one side of the ball being this, that, or the other thing. Never been a coordinator.
Wow. Okay.
Offensive coordinator, interim head coach, and offensive coordinator for the Bills for 1 year.
Yeah. How about that? He was the running backs coach in Jacksonville back in 2003, 2004. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I played Pop Warner with his son.
How about that? All right.
Damn. Well, good football player. Played at Penn State.
Wow. Good for him and them. But yeah. Okay. So yeah, assistant head coach in a couple different spots, Jets and the Bills. And yeah, just, I guess they were going for the sort of the Harbaugh, John Harbaugh type move there. And I agree. I think he's a head coach type guy. It's just, it feels like the juju in LA has just gone irreversibly in the wrong direction, and like they could all use a change of scenery in order to make that work.
He's the one I would say that I can see moving on and you'd saying and him finding success or teams wanting to bring him in for an interview and finding success and things like that. Some of that, you know, I don't think Matt Patricia's coming in for a head coaching interview this next go around. I don't think Bill O'Brien will be getting a college or I could see him getting a college head coaching job. He will not be getting an NFL head coaching job. I don't think for the Falcons, Dan Quinn. I don't see Dan Quinn getting any type of recognition as a potential, you know, head coach moving forward. Anthony Lynn is the only one that I can see teams actually picking up the phone and going, yep, I want to talk to this guy because I think there may be other things to this and I like him.
It feels Ron Rivera-esque. Like it just sort of ran out in that spot. And I mean, Rivera landed on his feet immediately. He's going to be, you know, Anthony Lynn, if he gets fired at the end of the year, is going to be good guy of the year. Everybody's going to talk about how good of a guy he is. And that always helps. It helps too. I don't think no one was talking about how good of a guy Matt Patricia is when his own players were liking the NFL Instagram post about him getting fired. So that says all you need to know. Let's go to the Lions real quick. Obviously, making a GM change, head coach change. I think we may have mentioned this last time, but is Stafford's time up too?
I don't think. I mean, we'll have to. I can look and see. I just think from a contract perspective, his time won't be up. I think it's time to look seriously at a transition of power. I think it's time to get the next guy in there, even if you don't think he needs to play for, you know. And I know everyone says he's not going to play for 2 years, but I mean, shoot, Patrick Mahomes sat for a year. So if Patrick Mahomes can sit for a year, literally everyone else can too. Because I don't think anyone's walking into the league and going to be looking like him. So I don't think Stafford's done there, and I don't think from a money perspective that they are, you know, ready to dip out on him. I'm looking now to see.
Well, The Athletic already has a piece on Matt Stafford trade destinations. So it seems like he has 1 year left in his deal, but it does seem two. Like 2 years. Okay. It does feel like he, out of the vets, is the most likely. I mean, the other one would be Matt Ryan, but it feels like he's the most likely to get dealt, because it just feels like everybody, like, they've got a clean house, and that might just mean the quarterback needs to go and start fresh too, because isn't, with how low they're going to be drafting, a new QB or a new GM and a new head coach going to want to have their young guy to build around?
Who are you talking about there?
The Lions.
What do you say, how high they're going to be drafting? Or
I mean, they're going to be down
top 10, 15.
Yeah. I mean, 4-7. Yeah,
no, I mean, I think, and that's where, I mean, you know, so there's two things I think that GM will have to look into. Number one, you know, getting his guy, and that's well and good, but I think he can sit behind a guy like Stafford for a year or two. I mean, Stafford's dead cap hit in 2021 is $25 million. So I don't think from a GM's perspective that number looks all that good in terms of, all right, let's get off on the right foot with a $25 million dead cap hit. It's about $10 million in 2022, and it's actually he's an additional four. His contract isn't through 2023, but his dead cap hit in 2023 is $4.9 million. I don't really know how that works. Not a cap expert, but I think it's definitely a time for a new GM with a decently high draft pick. Once again, depending on how this draft falls, if you're sitting there and you love Zach Wilson, or you love the kid from North Dakota State, or anyone like that, and you're drafting six and he falls there, all right, let's get him in. We're going to bring him into Detroit. He's my guy for the future. That's who I'm attaching to my hip. And he's going to sit behind Matt for a year. Let's get past this $25 million dead cap hit. If Matt sucks, we're going to stick him in. If Matt is decent, then, you know, we're good there too. But I think it's – you saw what the Packers just did it with and maybe it's motivating like it was for Aaron Rodgers. I don't know any, if there's any relevance to the drafting of Jordan Love, and now Aaron Rodgers looking like peak Aaron Rodgers. He's on, honestly, I would say that it doesn't matter and it's a stupid headline, but yes. Aaron Rodgers might be the pettiest athlete on the planet Earth. So I'm not ruling it out necessarily. But yeah, I think if you're the Lions, it's, I mean, at minimum time to start thinking about bringing in a new blood.
All right. Here's one crazy off the wall concept. The Broncos trade for Stafford.
Oh, I'd love that.
Big QB, strong arm, fits the LA perspective, like what he's looking for.
Cut that ball through the wind of Mile High.
And then you've got two. I mean, you have Mahomes, and then the guy that was doing the Mahomes stuff before Mahomes, but in a way less sexy way, in Stafford, because he was the original. I feel like weird. Well, maybe him and Rodgers, but they were both like weird arm angle guys. Like, oh, we're going to do crazy stuff with the ball and throw off balance, and like our arms talent is just so elite, it doesn't matter.
I mean, I think Stafford would have suitors at minimum. Yeah. I mean, you would have the Broncos would seriously have to consider it. I think the Raiders would have to consider it, depending on, we'll see how the rest of this year goes. I don't know what you're getting with Derek Carr week to week. I don't think they do either. Even the games they're winning, he doesn't seem to be going off. And we all know that John Gruden loves to push the ball downfield and have a dynamic offense, both running and throwing. I don't know if this trade would happen because it's in the division, but the Bears would have to be, the Bears would have to consider it. I mean, if you can bring in a guy like Stafford, once again, I don't even know if the Lions would, you hate sending a guy in the division, but you've also, I mean, you've seen the Packers, mm-hmm. you know, you've seen, or Brett Favre playing for the Vikings, you know, in a Vikings jersey. You never thought that day would come, and it did. So weirder things have definitely happened. But there are multiple teams that I can see. I mean, right now, if, you know, depending on what happens with the Saints, could the Saints be interested in a Matt Stafford for a year or two? I mean, clearly what they've seen out of Jameis in practice, what we saw from Taysom Hill yesterday, if Jameis can't beat that out, then I don't see, you know, I think Matt Stafford, of all guys, he would be this year's Phil Rivers, except he's not, he can still throw the ball. He's not physically breaking down, and he's probably about 5 years younger than Phil Rivers. So I think he would be a, I mean, he'll have suitors. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, no doubt. Man, there's going to be a lot of dominoes in the QBs this offseason, I think, between draft picks and guys moving around because, yeah, Phil Rivers, he's another example of does he stay? Does he – I mean, he's a one-year deal guy. Do they re-sign him? Does he retire?
I think Phil Rivers is toast. I mean,
I don't think he's been very good.
Right, their offense is big piece on
statistically not much better. I mean, marginally better than it was last year with Jacoby Brissett. Their defense has been out of this world.
Right, and that Blackman kid that they found will be the defensive rookie of the year. You get him with Darius Leonard and DeForest Buckner and some of these other pieces. I mean, that's – and Ed Dodd, who's the assistant GM and director of player personnel, has been on the – on my radar for a Jags GM, because I mean you've seen what Chris Ballard and him have built there, mm-hmm. and it's kind of hard to not want to bring in a guy like that. I can't see, some of it's where it's like, all right, Phil Rivers looks like he's breaking down, he's shot putting the ball down the field, but I mean, he's kind of always done that, yeah, so right. Maybe it's okay. I don't know, I think they're between Frank Reich and Chris Ballard and other the powers that be. They know what they need. And I mean, you know, I think they'll make the playoffs. I think there'll be a first round exit in the playoffs, and you know, maybe they get frisky, make it to the wild card weekend. And I mean, hopefully we still have football, but
right.
I'll be interested to see what happens with the Colts for sure. Both as a football fan, as a division rival.
I mean, these names just to wrap up here that we could see on new teams next year: Darnold, Newton, Rivers, if he's still around.
I was going to say real quick, the 31 teams passed on this guy narrative for Cam Newton seems to have died. I don't know where all those Twitter people went, but y'all let me know how that's working out on the 31 teams passed on this guy.
Yeah, because he's lost it.
Thanks.
He's just not good anymore. I mean, all right, so the other names maybe – whatever the mess is in Washington. Wentz, question mark. There's still the Dak Prescott contract issues because he's still not under contract for next year. You've got Chicago, and neither of those guys will be starting anywhere else. Cousins is a potential trade candidate I have seen, as well as Stafford and Matt Ryan. Teddy B, is he back in Carolina? And then Jimmy G and the questions always seemingly surrounding him in San Francisco and whether or not they can get over the hump with him at quarterback. So we'll see. He's been injured a lot now, by the way. He's only had one healthy season, and that was last year.
Well, and that goes back to the Patriots. That's not just, you know, a recent, you know, let's not forget when they signed him, he had a torn ACL. You know, they signed him with that massive contract while he was actively on the IR. I think it goes back to him in college. It goes back to him with the Patriots. It's now, I mean, once again, it's not news to anyone. The best ability is availability, and he does not have it.
No, he doesn't. And for Kyle Shanahan, who's done so much, it feels like, they're that piece away.
Within Shanahan's offense, he doesn't need Pat Mahomes. He doesn't need Aaron Rodgers. We all get enamored and we talk a lot about the McVay offense, the Shanahan offense. Most of it is predicated on running the heck out of the ball.
Yes, it is.
You know, they run the ball a lot. Yeah, you see the splash plays and, you know, occasionally they'll throw it 50, 60 times a game. But the most of the time, those guys want to run the ball. It's that zone, you know, run game that Shanahan's dad made very famous and popular in the NFL. So to be the quarterback for a Kyle Shanahan coach team, he doesn't need a world beater, but he needs more than Nick Mullins. Exactly. I think that's a pretty fair assessment for if you're, you know, John Lynch and you're judging Kyle Shanahan, you're going, golly, my boy doesn't need much, but God, he definitely needs more than Nick Mullins. So, I mean, we got it, whatever that takes, whether it's Jimmy G actually being healthy for once or getting him some fresh blood here, you know, it's got to happen.
though they managed to beat the Rams on Sunday somehow with Nick Mullins. Pretty impressive stuff there. I mean, he gets it done, man. He's a good coach. And
absolutely.
Wish he was in Jacksonville somehow, but, you know, that is what it is. Hopefully the Jaguars are on their way to finding their version of Kyle Shanahan, the guy that will bring the franchise back to glory here.
Joe Brady.
I wouldn't complain about that at all. I mean, the guy's done. He's won everywhere he's been. We'll put it that way.
Right. And I'll put, cause I know the other, you know, big name is Eric Bieniemy, and I'm putting Eric Bieniemy in the same category that I do with the Belichick disciples, where it's like, do we know that he's the reason that this whole thing is kicked? Why are we so positive? Which, once again, you know, just like I said with Justin Fields, I'm far from sitting here saying, you know, stamp it, certify it, Eric Bieniemy is a bust as a head coach one day. But when you work under a guy like Andy Reid, we know, you know, he's calling some of the plays, all the plays, most of the plays. I don't know. I'm not in the headset. But you've seen what happens when the Belichick disciples leave. You know, being close to greatness doesn't mean that you were the catalyst or you are the great. So I'll be interested. You know, once again, if the Jags hired Eric Bieniemy tomorrow, I'm stoked. It is the best candidate, you know, head coaching hire that we've had since Tom Coughlin, you know, when he was our actual coach. So I'm not upset at that. It's just got to be in the back of your mind now. But some people also said that about Frank Reich, as when, you know, he left underneath Doug Peterson. True.
and proved he was the guy and Peterson was less of it.
Right, exactly. And then you see Matt Nagy leave Andy Reid, and mm-hmm. Matt Nagy doesn't look like much. I mean, so it's complicated. I think that's why you interview these guys, and that's why you go through this that's why it's such a process. And we'll be interested. I think that my admiration or want for Joe Brady is he is now doing it in two different places, in two different levels of football. Back, mm-hmm. I mean, there is nothing sexy about the Carolina Panther roster. I mean, they're missing their best player all year. Teddy Bridgewater is a very average quarterback. It's a great story, but let's just be honest here. He is not a world beater, mm-hmm. and he's getting the best out of him. He turned Joe Burrow into the first overall pick. Joe Burrow, I mean, even the year before at LSU he was projected to be an undrafted free agent by the draft, you know, quote unquote experts. No one saw that coming from him with a year under. It's not like that was his only year starting. He started as that whole previous junior year at LSU. And Joe Brady, you know, took that up to the next level, having Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase and, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire and everything else. That obviously, you know, when you have that kind of talent around you, that's a part of it. But I don't know. I like Joe Brady. I don't know what I've never heard him speak, or I don't know what his leadership characteristics are, but it'll be interesting for sure.
Well, a leader is as good as the staff they assemble, a lot of times they say. And if you get I don't need Joe Brady to be a superhero or whoever comes in here to be a superhero. I just want him to be a good manager of people. And whether that be their staff or of the players, I mean, that's more or less what it breaks down to. And hopefully we'll get somebody that's able and willing to do all that.
Right. Yeah. That's, I couldn't agree more.
Colin McQuillan, appreciate you, as always, pinch hitting here in a pinch and filling in for Alex to talk a little bit about the NFL, the Jaguars in particular, as the rebuilding project officially kicked off on Sunday with the firing of GM Dave Caldwell and more to come. But we will look forward to...
He can't hurt us anymore, Scott. Hurt us anymore.
Thank goodness. But I look forward to catching up with you again here soon, and hopefully we'll have some positive things to talk about.
Sure. We'll have a nice head coaching search pod here.
Exactly.
Here in another month and a half.
Well, Alex and I mastered that last year with Florida State, so we're ready to dive right back in and have you on to get into that with the Jaguars.
Sounds good, buddy. Thanks for having me.
I want to thank Colin McQuillan again for joining us here on the podcast today, filling in for Alex, talking plenty of NFL and the Jaguars in particular. And as we wrap things up here this week, I want to remind you, if you give us a follow on Twitter, if you're one of those folks, or if you're not, give us a follow at sportsbar_pod, and there you'll get plenty of additional content, as well as the weekly Turco trifecta. Not a great week for Alex again. He goes 1-2 and misses his lock of the week. So his record now total on the season is 13-22, 6-4 in the lock of the weeks. But he wanted me to point out the fact that he somehow went undefeated, 15-15, I believe he said, in his bets this weekend. So I don't know. Tweet at him at aturco_23 to figure out how he is getting all of them right in his personal bets and then leading you all astray in his Turco trifecta every week. That is between you all and him, but I had to go ahead and give that a mention. And of course, that comes out usually on Thursdays or Fridays as Alex gets settled in, gets the lines, and makes his picks. But that comes to you exclusively on our Twitter page at sportsbar_pod. So for the absent Alex Turco and Colin McQuillan filling in here today, I'm Scott Manzi saying so long. Appreciate you all tuning in to another episode of the Sports Bar Podcast.